Imitate me, just as I also imitate Christ. Now I praise you, brethren, that you remember me in all things and keep the traditions just as I delivered them to you. But I want you to know that the head of every man is Christ, the head of woman is man, and the head of Christ is God. Every man praying or prophesying, having his head covered, dishonors his head, but every woman who prays or prophesies with her head uncovered dishonors her head, for that is one and the same as if her head were shaved. For if a woman is not covered, let her also be shorn. But if it is shameful for a woman to be shorn or shaved, let her be covered. For a man indeed ought to cover his head, since he is the image and glory of God, but a woman is the glory of man. For man is not from woman, but woman from man, nor was man created for woman, but woman for man. For this reason, the woman ought to have a symbol of authority on her head because of the angels. Now we're clear on all this, right? You understand? So as soon as he added that, because of the angels, that made everything make sense. Nevertheless, neither is man independent of woman, nor woman independent of man in the Lord. For as woman came from man, even so man also comes through woman, but all things are from God. Judge among yourselves, is it proper for a woman to pray to God with her head uncovered? Does not even nature itself teach you that if a man has long hair, it is a dishonor to him? But if a woman has long hair, it is a glory to her, for her hair is given to her for a covering. But if anyone seems to be contentious, we have no such custom, nor do the churches of God. And we should all say, praise the Lord, that there's no custom, right? So, if I were choosing my text, I would skip 1 Corinthians chapter 11. But I'm not, because we're going through verse by verse, and this is where we are. So if you happen to be here visiting today, and you think this is a male chauvinistic church, it's not so. I'm going to do my best with this. I confess to you, it is a difficult passage. But let me just tell you what I believe the heart of the matter of the passage is, and that is regarding the principle of submission. Okay, I say that word, submission. And it's like fingernails on a blackboard to some of you. Even to those of us who have known the Lord, walk with the Lord, trust the Lord, the idea of submission is not one we go, yeah, I can't wait. Now, if you've walked through submission and you've experienced submission and what it can do and how it works, you're grateful for how the Lord made this. But it is not something any of us by nature are excited about, because by nature we are not submissive. In fact, the Bible teaches that by nature we are in fact rebellious. I have two grandchildren. They are the most flawless, incredibly beautiful, wonderful children. But they have wicked little hearts. I do not have to teach them anything about this. I've never talked to them about being bad. They will sit with one another, and when they think no one's looking, they'll fight with each other. Hannah's 3, Michael's 2, just turned. And they'll argue, they'll fight, they'll grab each other's stuff. And then when you're looking, especially Hannah, she'll put it down and, I didn't do anything. She's already got that sneakiness going. It's my son's fault. He taught them these things. He's not here, so I'm going to talk about him. But by nature, submission is not something we have, because we have a nature of rebellion. That's what we have. That's what we are. Paul begins this section with a call to follow me as I follow Christ. And this really is the only way we would want to follow any man, is if they were following Christ. And men, understand that. If you want your wife to submit to you, to follow you, you better follow Christ, or you cannot really expect her to follow you. It won't work. It won't happen. Follow me as I follow Christ. Paul had a solid walk with the Lord, and he followed him throughout his life and could boldly say that to these Corinthians. Now, by the way, this is a bridge verse, follow me as I follow Christ, or imitate me as I imitate Christ. It's a verse that really points back to the previous section in which Paul has been talking to the Corinthians about many different ways in which they need to follow Christ and follow him, but it also points forward to the authority and submission issue. And Paul is saying, when it comes to submission and authority, follow me as I follow Christ. Paul was very submitted to Christ. And he had been an example. And they desperately needed an example because these Corinthians were divided. They were getting drunk at the communion table. They were immoral. And now this issue of submission and authority, and he's going to tell them about showing respect. He goes on, he says, I praise you, brethren, that you remember me in all things and keep the traditions just as I also, as I delivered them to you. He commends them for staying with the traditions or ordinances. He says that just before he begins to teach them about this issue of the Christian life and essential and the essential issue of authority and submission, to keep traditions. Now, the background is this. Paul has been answering questions of the Corinthians, many different questions regarding practice of issues, and how now he comes to this one of God's order, the question of the order that God has designed. And he's dealt with this in relationship to food sacrifice to idols in previous chapters. Now he'll relate to authority, submission, subordination, if you will. And the order is the order of headship. He begins with this in verse 3. He says, I want you to know that the head of every man is Christ. The head of woman is man, and the head of Christ is God. What he's saying is there is a divine order. God made it. There is God, then Christ, then man, then woman. This is God's order, and Paul does not apologize for it. Paul doesn't skate around it. He doesn't dance around the issue. He just states the fact. This is a problem we have in our society. We don't like to state the facts in truth. We dance around the truth all the time. Have you noticed with the bombing in Boston how they are dancing around the truth? The media, you will not hear very often, and it's very minimal that you'll hear the words Islamic, radical Islamic terrorist connected to this, but that is exactly what these men were. And I say that not to get political with you about this, but simply to say that is an example of how we dance around the truth. We don't want to speak the truth. And it's the same with this subject I'm covering today. Our culture today does not want to accept the roles of men and women, so we dance around it. But the Bible states it plainly, and it doesn't apologize. And when we state it plainly, like I am today, we are in danger of being called narrow and bigoted and, you know, archaic. Paul's going to give an illustration. It's an illustration that we really don't get in our culture in the same way. We need to understand he's using this issue of head coverings as an example of a principle of how custom and culture can dictate behavior. With all that the Corinthian church had done wrong, had been involved in, it is not a surprise that they had struggled with this area, because this area of submission and authority is the root of many issues in the church and in life in general. Now, listen, let's make this clear. Ladies, just so I can put your mind at ease, hopefully. This is not talking about inferiority and superiority. That is not submission. It does not mean man is superior to women, more important than women. Listen, when it comes to my home, my wife is way more important than I am. I always said that even growing up. My kids could live with their mother and do very well. If their mother was taken out of the scene, there would be chaos. Even just by myself, alone, I cannot function. I just spent a week, my wife was away all week, and she's leaving again on Monday for a conference, so this is a very sensitive subject to me right now. I had to call her several times just to find things. Where do we keep this? Where do we keep that? I found myself saying, I'm not going to cook. I'm going out to eat because I don't know where anything is. We need to understand, though, what Paul's saying. The issue that Paul will address is a lack of reverence and humility when it comes to praying and prophesying. That's the subject matter. But the issue then becomes, the principle becomes a principle of submission. When he states the order, he is not speaking about this inferiority. He's not saying be chauvinistic or feministic. That's not what God's order is about. And he doesn't say, when he relates it to Christ, he doesn't say the source of Christ is God. He says the head of Christ is God. You see, if you said the source of Christ is God, that's heretical. Because we know that Christ and God the Father, along with the Spirit, are co-equal, co-eternal. And Christ was in submission. And this is where we begin to understand the Bible. Jesus, as a co-equal and co-eternal with the Father and the Spirit, but he subordinated himself for the sake of the plan of salvation. He said, I and the Father are one. He who has seen me has seen the Father. He was very much equal with the Father. In fact, that is why the Jews wanted to kill him. Because though being a man, it says in John, he claimed he made himself equal with God. But it says in Philippians, though being in the form of God, he did not consider it robbery to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation. He yielded to the plan of the Father. He stepped into his position of submission to accomplish the divine directive. That's what Jesus did. But it didn't make him any less important or inferior to the Father, or the Father superior to him. We have this tendency, I think, to think of it that way. There's the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and we think of them as sort of this superior-inferior issue. It's not that way. It's not that way at all. And in that context, he says, the head of every man is Christ. So the head of Christ is God. The head of every man is Christ. And the head of every woman is man. In the context of who Christ is. And here's the point, if Christ could submit to the plan of salvation and submit himself to the cross, how much more shouldn't we then submit to our roles that God has put us in? By the way, ladies, let me try and put your mind at ease. This is not saying every man has the right of authority over every woman. It is not saying that you as a woman have to submit to any man. It's relating to husbands and wives submitting, and it's relating to submitting to church leadership. Remember, this is in the context of Christianity and church. So it's not saying, for example, as some young men like to think, that they can tell young women what to do because I'm a man, you're a woman, you've got to listen to me. Not so. And if a guy tells you that, single ladies, tell him I hit the road. I had a young man in my office at one point with his girlfriend, they weren't even engaged, and he turned to her right in front of me and said, listen, you have to submit to me. And she looked at me and said, is that true? I said, no, and dump him. And she did. I don't know what happened to him. Pray for him. He needs Jesus. It's wives submit to husbands, and then in the church, submit to your elders and leaders. The thing is, the principle is that God raises up men to lead. That's just God's way. And it's been a principle all the way back in the Old Testament. As we see, he appoints the priests and the Levites. They're all male. In the New Testament, we see he says there should be apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, and teachers. Each one of those are masculine terms. Now, by the way, it doesn't mean there's not wonderful position and role for women in the church. There is. And women are used in wonderful ways. It just doesn't happen to be in the role of leading. That doesn't make them inferior. And again, people will say that's archaic. That's narrow-minded. Well, maybe it is archaic. But I look at our world and the way things are working today, and I ask the question, how's that working out for us? So we come now to the issue of head coverings. And I will confess to you, I really wish Paul hadn't used this illustration. Because it's a difficult passage. And We'll take each verse on its own. I'll try to give you the best understanding I can. So verse 4, he says, every man praying or prophesying, having his head covered, dishonors his head. Now, you do need to understand there was cultural issues, and this was actually counterculture in their day, because in Judaism, men covered their heads when they prayed. Even today, if you were to go to the Wailing Wall, and you were to go up and wanted to go to the Wailing Wall, you have to put a covering on your head. If you don't have your own hat or yarmulke, they give you a little cardboard yarmulke that looks like a cardboard bowl, and you put it on your head. And they even give you little bobby pins and stuff, although that doesn't do any good for me because there's nothing to bobby pin to. But you do go to there, and you have to then put that on your head as you go to the wall to pray. The reason for that was that when Moses came off of the mountain, he would come down with a veil over him, and the Jews believed that this was so that they would not see the glory of God in his face. Paul actually corrected that in 2 Corinthians chapter 3, and you can read it on your own when you get a chance. He said that he wore the veil so that they would not see the glory of God fading from his face as he was out of the presence of God. So we have the glory of the Lord in us. It's no longer coming on us. We have the glory of the Lord in us in the person of the Spirit through Christ. So with the glory of the Lord in us now, we no longer need to have a covering on our head. In the Roman culture, they wore coverings in pagan temples. And so Paul is saying that this would not be so in the church. He's saying a man no longer needs to cover his head because Christ is his head. And if he covers his head, he's dishonoring the head who is Christ. The point is that a Christian in man is not subject to the rules of Judaism or the pagan culture, but to Christ, who is his head. Now, it goes on to say, for a man indeed ought not to cover his head, since he is in the image, he is the image and glory of God, but a woman is the glory of man. Now, verse 5. Now we get to the women. Relax, ladies, it's okay. But every woman who prays or prophesies with her head uncovered dishonors her head, for that is one and the same as if her head were shaved. For if a woman is not covered, let her also be shorn, but it is shameful for a woman to be shorn or shaved, let her be covered. So here's the thing. In the church, what was happening is there were women coming to Christ, and there was great freedom in the Lord. But listen, you need to understand that freedom does not mean you do whatever you want. That's not freedom. There has to be respect and reverence that still need to be considered. And culturally in Corinth, and this is where Paul uses it differently, whereas with the men he goes counterculture, with the woman he says stay within the culture, and here's why. Because there were temple prostitutes who some of the commentaries say they would shave their heads, and that would be a sign of a prostitute, and not wearing a head covering would be a sign of a prostitute. The other thing was that they would use hair in an enticing men to draw men into sin. Paul is saying here, for the sake of modesty, for the sake of decency, for the sake of reverence within the church, when prophesying and praying. He's not saying women had to wear head coverings all the time. And Paul was saying, in a sense, he said, if you're not going to cover your head, you might as well shave your head, because you're already showing such shame. See, in their culture, women were already in a subordinate role. Women were not respected whatsoever. In fact, every time Christianity comes into a culture, it elevates the level of women tremendously in every culture where Christianity has ever come through. They were treated in that day as chattel, and now they had this newfound freedom in Christ, but that freedom didn't mean they should show disrespect for the cultures and traditions of that day and what were needed within the church. See, apparently this had been an issue in the church, and that's why Paul's answering the question. It's a question I wish wasn't asked, because it's hard. But here's a summation of it. If a married woman uncovered her head while praying and prophesying, it was dishonoring to her husband, and thus dishonoring the Lord, because he is subject to Christ. The husband is subject to Christ. So ultimately, when you dishonor your husband, you're dishonoring the Lord. And ladies who are married, you should remember that. When you show disrespect for your husband, you're showing disrespect for the Lord, because he's under the leadership of the Lord. Now, if a single woman uncovered her head while praying and prophesying, it would dishonor the leaders of the church whom God had raised up and thus would dishonor Christ also. Now he goes into the why of this, verse 8. And really the answer of why, the first answer, is it is God's order. He says, for man is not from woman, but woman from man, nor was man created for woman, but woman for man. In other words, what he's saying here, he goes all the way back to Genesis, and he says, Adam, you know, the idea is Adam didn't come from Eve, but Eve came from Adam. This was established in the order before the fall of man. Genesis tells us that God said that all the creation was good. Then he looked down on man, and he said, it is not good that man should be alone. And he said, I will make him a helper comparable to him, or a co-responder is the idea, one who would be part of him because he was taken from him. He made him like us, but different, ladies. God made Eve like Adam, but different. And thank the Lord that our wives are different, right? You would not want to be married to you. And sometimes we think we would, but it's true. You know, because we are so different. Our culture is so mixed up. This is the way it is. Our culture is so mixed up because we don't get the order of creation right. You see, my head is Christ, so I'm not mixed up. I believe the Genesis story, so I'm not mixed up. But there are distinct differences between men and women, right? I mean, women say black, men say white. You know what I mean? It's that quick, that easy. Women say stop, men say go. Women ask for directions. Men don't even follow the GPS. I talked with another man after service, the first service. I mentioned this in first service. I don't follow the GPS. I set the GPS, and then I try to beat the GPS. I figure, you know, it's going to give me a time. I'm going to go a different route and see if I can go faster than with the GPS so I can get there. Drives my wife crazy. It also drives the GPS crazy, which is, by the way, an Australian woman's voice. And she's always saying, recalculating, recalculating. I don't do the Australian accent very well. We have a very unique relationship. But God says, I'm going to make you this woman who is different. She's like you, but different. And he says, I'm going to make you a helper. You see, God looks down on man, and he sees him all alone. As man is trying to give names to all the animals, and man sees Mr. and Mrs. Hippopotamus, Mr. and Mrs. Elephant, Mr. and Mrs. this and that, and he names them all, and there's no Mrs. Adam. There's no one he can get close to. You know, he names the porcupine. It's kind of like, it's hard to get close to a porcupine. And he says, and he looks down on this poor man, and he says, oh man, you need help. And ladies, that is what you've come to our lives for, to help us. I mentioned this past week, I needed help. I needed my wife, and she's leaving me again. Pray for me. You see, Eve's existence is relative to Adam's need. And when Adam sees the woman for the very first time, he looks at her and he says, this is now bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. And she shall be called woman because she was taken out of man. The intimacy in marriage is a fulfillment, and it's part of that need being fulfilled. But it's much more than that. The two shall become one flesh. There's no longer, you don't think on your own. You no longer have that kind of, if you will, you think it's freedom, but somehow there's a new freedom. It's the way God made us. And when we deviate from this, we get all confused. And our culture gets all confused. And that is why it is confused right now. And even to the degree where we have genders getting confused with who they are. God made them Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. Verse 10, he says, for this reason, the woman ought to have a symbol of authority on her head because of the angels. Okay, now I understand, Paul. Thank you very much. We'll get to the angels in a minute. You see, the head covering is a symbol of authority. Listen, it's an act of voluntary submission that Paul is calling for in their culture for the sake of reverence in that setting of prayer and prophecy. That's the context. Submission is the root, a yieldedness, a willingness to lay aside what you think are your rights. It relates similarly to the food sacrificed to idols. And we apply certain things like this in our own culture. We dress a certain way depending on the setting, right? You come to church, you dress somewhat modestly, hopefully, and you get dressed a little bit. You might wear blue jeans, but you wear a little nicer shirt, usually, some of you, most of you. You've taken a shower, hopefully. But when you, you know, when you go other places, you dress differently. If you go to the beach, you can wear a bathing suit, right? If you came in here and had a bathing suit on, a number of things would happen. It's not the setting for that, you see. First of all, if you're married, your husband would be dishonored. He would feel disrespected. He would go, "What are you doing?" "Oh, well, I'm just wearing my bathing suit." The other thing is, I think one of our ushers might escort you out. And you would certainly draw undue attention to yourself. And that's the point, that you're not yielded and submitted to what's going on around you. And in the Corinthian culture, it seems as though this is what some of the ladies were doing. He says, nevertheless, verse 11, neither is man independent of woman, nor woman independent of man. For as a woman came from man, even so man also comes from woman, but all things are from God. So we are codependents. We men are not independent of their wives. Brothers, you know this. And if you are not yet married, if you're a single guy and you think you're going to remain independent when you get married, then you probably should stay single and just forget about that. You're not going to be independent. It's a big problem men have in marriage. More men than women, they enter marriage thinking they'll continue to be as free as they were when they were single. And I put that "free" in quotations because it's a pseudo-freedom, really. But here's the thing that Paul's saying. We are dependent on women for procreation. Yes, man was created first, but every man that came after Adam came through a woman, including Christ. So the point is, guys, we can't do it without them. We need each other. So let's go to the angels now, because Paul threw that in there. The other reason that Paul gives for them to cover their head is because of the angels. Now, what does he mean? We know that the angels were created by God, and at some point, one of them, Lucifer, the cherub who covers, it says in Ezekiel, the cherub who covers, he covered himself with his wings because of his respect, right? But that cherub who covers rebelled against God. Over in Isaiah, he says over and over, "I will be like the Most High God," and various other "I wills" that he will do. God then judges him, and a third of the angels follow Lucifer. And we come to know him as, of course, Satan, the devil. This rebellion seems to have made angels very sensitive to submission and authority. And angels are in this realm where they're watching us. They're observing. That's what Paul's saying. Because of the angels, there's an observing going on, that the angels are watching what's going on and how humans are submitting, because this issue of submission and rebellion became such a huge thing to them. So Paul says, for their sake, the women in this role ought to cover their heads. And you see, the issue was apparel had created an appearance of evil. Now here's what Paul goes on to say, just again to put our minds at ease. He says, judge among yourselves, is it proper for a woman to pray to God with her head uncovered? Paul does not give an edict here. He doesn't say that you have to do it, but he appeals to their sense of reverence and decency. Does not even nature itself teach you that if a man has long hair, it is a dishonor to him? Now the word there in the King James is a shame to him. Now it's kind of like, naturally and generally speaking, men should have short hair. What about the hippie movement? Some of you guys remember that. I was looking at some pictures yesterday of one of the fellows in the church who just had their wedding vows renewed, and this fellow had a mullet down the middle of his back and neck, and I looked at some of my own pictures, actually. Yesterday, my wife pulled out some pictures of myself with my son when they were little kids, and she looked at it, and she goes, look at the head of hair you had. And I said, oh, that's a shame. You see, it doesn't say that it's a sin to have long hair. It's just a shame. And I look at my hair now and say, wow, this is a shame too. So there's a lot of shame going around. But if a woman has long hair, it is a glory to her, for her hair is given to her for a covering. But notice what Paul says in verse 16. But if anyone seems to be contentious, we have no such custom, nor do the churches of God. In other words, Paul's not saying This is an ordinance, wear head coverings. And we know that some denominations, some ministries of women wear head coverings. That's what they do. I don't really have a problem with it. I don't think it's necessarily wrong for them to do that. But it's not as culturally an issue today. It's not like it's not a cultural issue of coming to church and when we pray you should be wearing a head covering because there's temple prostitutes that we're dealing with who shave their heads or wear their hair in a certain way, you see. If you're married, your husband is your covering. If you're single, the leadership of the church is your covering, if you will, under Christ. So there's no custom regarding hair or head coverings, but there is an overriding principle of submission and authority in God's order, and that's the point. I believe that's what Paul's trying to say here. So in conclusion, that is the principle for the church and for Christian life. Submission is part of Christian life. And fellas, let's all hit it now and say it clearly. We all know that Ephesians 5:22, it's one of men's favorite verses in all the Bible. You've got it circled. You've got it circled in your wife's Bible. You've got it underlined, highlighted, starred. Wives, submit unto your husbands as unto the Lord. And you can quote it. You can quote it backwards. You want to make sure your wife knows it, you know, anytime. And I want to make something clear to you. It never says that you are to use that verse to beat your wife with and to say, hey, woman, you need to submit to me. I know one guy used to say, woman, submit or be hit. Yeah, I'm saying. I'm saying somebody else used to. I didn't say it. Somebody else said it. But they want to use that verse. Listen, that verse is preceded by this verse, submitting to one another in the fear of the Lord. You see, the principle of submission applies to all of us. We are all submitted, first of all, unto God. And this submission, ladies, that we're talking about is the order within the church. It's the order within things. But you need to submit to Christ personally and individually. Everyone has to do that. And it is then a role and responsibility. And it also goes on to say, brothers, husbands, love your wives as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her. The role of a husband, a role of a man, is to lead his wife in the ways of God and to love his wife as Christ loved the church. If you are doing that, and you have a godly wife, I will tell you she will submit to you. Ladies, it's easy to submit to a godly man. If there's a problem there, you know, yeah, you might need some counsel and direction. But listen, a man needs to be submitted to Christ. Real men submit to Christ. And single ladies, let me just say this. If you want a man, if you're looking for a man, you want to get married one day, what you want is a man whose life is submitted unto Christ. That's what you want. If you settle for less, you're making a mistake. Now, if you're married and you have a husband who's trying to follow the Lord, is trying to submit to the Lord, then submit to him, support him, respect him, and pray for him. Did you hear that word respect, by the way? That is what men desperately need from their wives, is respect. Men, lead your wives and love your wives. Women, respect your husbands. This is God's order. And we will do well to follow it.